This is Great FM, a podcast series by Great HR, produced by Timber Media.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Great FM, everybody. Ahalya here, keeping you company as always. And I am really looking forward to today's conversation. You know, the past couple of months have really driven home one point for me specifically. I don't know, there's just a lot been happening, and something that I've experienced and I know for certain now is that if you don't invest in positive employee experience, you don't set your organization up for success. You know, regardless of the advent of AI, data analytics, all of this fancy technology at our disposal, it is still your people that make all the difference. And the minute that they stop feeling like their workplace cares for them, they stop caring for their workplace. Side note, you know, interestingly, I also realized while putting this episode together, a lot of times when we talk about HR, it feels like we're also sort of giving relationship advice. And I find that worth pondering, kind of tracks. But anyway, you know, one big googly that many HR leaders and professionals have been facing, especially in the Middle East and other multicultural geographies such as the Middle East, is how do you invest in employee experience effectively when you've got multiple cultures at play? It's not just the how, it's the what and why as well. So let's welcome Hisham El Saeed, a leadership development expert, CIPD trainer and facilitator, who's been a leading voice in the world of leadership development with over 20 years of experience, to help us unpack how the Middle East is navigating employee experience in a multicultural workforce. Hi, Hisham. Thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure to have you on Great FM.
Hello. Thank you, Ahalya, for hosting me. It's my pleasure to be with you today and with all the audience.
Absolutely. Hisham, did you resonate with that point at all about, you know, how there's a lot of parallels between HR advice and relationship advice sometimes?
Yes, absolutely, because it's a kind of a relationship. And it's also kind of a customer experience, but the customer here is the employee. So when we talk about employee experience, it's very similar to the customer experience. And now we are talking also about employee journey, which is similar to the customer journey from the moment they start interacting with the organization to beyond they leave the organization.
No, absolutely. You're so right about that. So, you know, let's start with the basics, give our listeners a bit of the lay of the land. When it comes to employee experience, how do you personally define it at this stage in your career? And what do you believe are the non-negotiable components of employee experience that one always has to look out for?
First of all, employee experience, in my definition, it is the multiplication of all the interactions, emotions, and perceptions of the employee from the moment they start interacting with the organization to even beyond the moment they leave the organization, because those impressions continue and then the word of mouth continue. Mm-hmm. And why it's a multiplication, not a summation? Because if any of those components are zero, the multiplication times zero is zero. So we have to take care of all the parts of the employee experience, the interactions, how the employee feel, what is the perceptions of all the organization. So it's not only about theory, it's also about the practicality of how do they feel, what are their emotions when they interact in the organization.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point that you just brought up about it's also after the job that has to be considered. You know, that's a very, very valid point. Yeah, please carry on.
Yeah, as you said, it has a start point, but it doesn't have a finish line, because this continues even after they leave the organization. The non-negotiable components, the second part of the question, first of all, as Simon Sinek said, you should start with the why. Do they understand why they are here in this place? And then what do they do? And finally, how do they do it? So it's kind of three circles with the why in the middle of it. And second part is the non-negotiable, disregarding the culture or the organization or the business or the industry or the size, is the psychological safety as well. Are employees allowed to speak without fear at any time to anyone? This is a very part that is non-negotiable of the employee experience. The third one is the growth. Do they have opportunity to move, or they will face stagnation, which more than half of the employees, according to recent surveys, face stagnation. So growth is another non-negotiable part. Mm-hmm. And the fourth and the last one is the system itself. When we talked about the customer journey and now we talk about the employee journey, we should be able to measure how many friction points are there in this journey and how to remove them. Our role as HR leaders is to remove those friction points, or at least to minimize those friction points in the employee journey as much as we can. So we create a proper system integrating technology, and we will talk more about that.
You know, we're off to a very strong start. I think you've already given us some extremely important points for us to ponder. But I do have a follow-up on this definition of employee experience for you, Hisham, which is, given the context of the Middle East, you know, it's basically a melting pot of cultures. People from all over the world come together. Does the definition vary in the context of that specific geography?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Of course, the employee experience is a universal concept, but we are talking here about a globally consistent, locally relevant context. Because in the Middle East, as you said, it's a melting pot. More than 200 nationalities live there. And there are things that might sound contradictory, but they are not. Like we have a multinational workforce, more than 80% of the workforce are expats, but we have a very strong reliance on nationalization and a focus on nationalization. So here in the Middle East, it's a bit different. When we talk about the cultural intelligence, for example, as a tool to see the employee experience from, we have to take into consideration that this is a collectivist society. So people really relate more to their communities, to their families, to their country. They carry pride when they talk about it. So it's not as in the US or in the Western societies where we talk about the individual contribution as the top of the pyramid. We are all familiar of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like self-actualization is on the top of the pyramid. I will say that's a bit different here in the Middle East. It's not about self-actualization. It's about the national pride, the social harmony. This is the top of the pyramid. This is where everyone is looking to achieve. And also there is a community mindset here. So everyone is belonging to a bigger community. And not only in the Middle East, most of the Asian countries as well is the same. Like, but most of the leadership theories are coming from the US or the UK or the Western world. But in the Middle East and most of the Asian countries, there is the meaning of the community, the belonging, the feeling of social purpose, it carry more weight than just the autonomy or the self-actualization.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, a very contextual nuance there for us to think about in more detail and talk about as we go through the rest of this conversation. I also do feel that when you talk about employee experience, right, Hisham, you can't sort of separate employee expectations from it. And we did recently have a conversation on Great FM covering employee expectations. But if you look at just the last decade, it's felt like actually, 2 or 3 decades, right? There's so much that's
Yeah.
happened so quickly. COVID first, then, remote and hybrid work became these big models that we had to, confront or deal with, navigate, and then AI, of course. So, what do you think in the midst of all of these rapid and mammoth changes, what do you think have been the biggest shifts in employee expectations on the employee experience front, and what hasn't changed at all?
You are absolutely right when you talked about the fast pace of the shift, because with the beginning of the internet, a new era has started. And actually, since COVID and followed by AI, another new era has started. And the shifts have been hilarious, actually. So before, the shift was more on the job descriptions, job security, what I'm expected to do. Now it's more about the personal meaning. What does it mean for me to be part of these organizations? Are the organizational values aligned with my personal values or not? This is number one shift that I have been seeing over the past 2, 3 years that felt like 20, 30 years, as you said. The second one is the feedback. So we are moving from a top-down feedback where the manager will take the employee into a room and then start giving them feedback to a two-way street. It's now a continuous dialogue that's happening. It's no longer that you need to sit and hear from your manager. Employees expect to be part of the feedback process, part of the decision making. We have been seeing the rise of the 360s more and more. So you are not evaluating your team only, but also your team is evaluating you. The third shift we are seeing is it is from the list of rewards or list of benefits that you will be entitled to when you join a job, to a holistic approach to recognition and well-being. There is a lot of talks now around well-being and psychological safety, and we touched on that, but it's no longer about the list of benefits mentioned in your contract. We talked about psychological safety, and we also need to talk about the psychological contract. It's not a written contract. It's not something that states you take X and Y, but what is the expectations both ways? What do the organization expect from the employee beyond her or his job description, and what do the employee expect from the organization beyond the list of benefits mentioned in the contract? And the last one is moving from a tech-enabling organization. We've been saying this a lot as well in the past years of we are tech-enabled to an AI-first. Now, most of the organizations are saying we are an AI-first organization. It's no longer about that you have tools or techniques. We are also seeing AI as a collaborator. I have seen something very funny a few days ago, which is an onboarding program for a digital colleague for an AI tool. So the workplace is really shifting around us.
Yeah. I think, you know, the word that you used, hilarious, I think it also just, it's been very surreal. It's been a very surreal past few years. And we're kind of just rolling with the punches almost. It feels like you can be proactive, but a lot of times you have to do the reaction well enough. And what do you think hasn't changed at all when it comes to, I'm sure, because like you said, it's a universal experience, right? There's certain things that you're just like, will never change no matter what. So what do you think those are?
Yeah, look, human beings are human beings. So everyone wants to feel valued and seen and fairly treated. But the definition of value and fair is changing. So
Yeah.
the concept itself is there, but how is it changing? And also the trust in the leadership, it remains the cornerstone of the employee experience, disregarding the context, the technology. Employees need to trust in the leadership.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about that in a bit later on in the conversation. But I also want to pick up on this point of having similar wants, likes, dislikes in the workplace, because the idea of multiculturalism is the crux of today's conversation. So talk to us a little bit about how being from different cultures actually impacts employee experience. Like I said, in some sense, we are all human beings. So why and how does culture become a point of note in the employee experience conversations, not just for the employees, but of course, for HR professionals, you know, building these programs and trying to create this culture in the first place?
Yeah, thank you. I love this question because I studied the cultural differences for years. I lived across four continents and worked across eight different countries. So I have experienced it myself. And I also studied cultural intelligence as a field of a study. And what we have been taught is all our lives that there is a golden rule, treat people the way you want to be treated. But when I studied cultural intelligence, we have been taught the platinum rule. Treat the people the way they want to be treated, because it's not necessarily that it will be the way you want to be treated. It will be the way they want to be treated, right? So like everyone needs to be respected. Everyone needs to be motivated. But those words have different definitions across cultures. Being respected in one culture is not the same. And from the very simple gestures of even shaking hands, which is not considered respect in a countries like Japan, for example, or China, where they do the bow thing, they don't shake hands. In other culture, they might hug. So respect is there. Everyone wants to treat the person in front of them with respect. Even when we talk about calling first names or calling family names or saying sir or mister or it's all respect at the end, but the way we show respect is different. This the way and we cannot do this without understanding really the cultural intelligence and the cultural difference. It's kind of bridging the gap, translating the intent into actions.
100% agree with you there, especially the idea of understanding, you know, taking the time to understand what it is that your employees want and delivering on that front rather than dictating almost to them what it is that you're going to provide or offer, right? I think that's where
Absolutely.
A lot of it falls through. So let's take this conversation to the virtual aspect of it all, you know, with remote work. I think this is true for the Middle East, but also for many other geographies. You're often interacting with people all over the world, right? Across cultures, geographies.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the biggest advantages of the model because it gives people exposure that they may not have had physically otherwise. But how should HR leaders and professionals sort of redefine employee experience through a screen? I'm sure that's one of the most challenging parts of the job these days.
Yes, absolutely. And it has become the default, right? So it's not something that is weird or something that's exceptional. Since COVID and post-COVID, when people talk about the new normal, remote work is almost the default mode of work. So people work across the screens all the times. And there's two aspects of this. So there is first the technical aspects. So you have to have the user experience or the employee experience designed in mind that is not 100% an in-person experience, how this is designed in a way that fits in a screen. And the second part of it is the non-technical part, or the human part of it, is the empathy and the rituals and stuff, things like the weekly check-ins, the recognition shout-outs that we might have, and all those things. And when we design the employee experience, we have to keep that in mind from both aspects, the technical aspects and the human aspect as well.
Yeah. How have you seen, you often take up this advisory role a lot, and how have you seen, the receptiveness to this advice carry on when it comes to the virtual aspect of it all? Do you think people are more open to experimenting with it? Because personally, having been in these positions before, I've definitely noticed some sort of hesitancy to even allow the remote work thing to be a
Yeah.
reality, to be the norm. So now that it has become that, do you think people are, more open to at least making the best of the situation, let me say.
Yeah. Yeah. The human being is by default ha having the fear of the unknown. So it was an
Yes.
unknown until COVID hits and it became reality. And as you said, it was kind of forced on organizations to apply remote work because there were curfew, people were not allowed to be as mobile as before. So it became the default and they had no option except ad adapting to it. And that's what's amazing about human beings, that their adaptability levels are so high. So once we are there, we were able to adapt to this. So yes, you're right, there was some hesitancy, but when it became a fact, it is there. So whether you like it or not, you have to adapt. And we were able to adapt. That's us as a human being.
No, absolutely, right? Agile just by virtue of nature. So, talk to me now a little bit about the on-ground context in the Middle East. It's a melting pot of cultures. We've discussed that it can be a real strength if you approach it the right way, but I'm also assuming it makes standardization difficult to some degree. So, what would be your top three do's as well as don'ts when it comes to building employee experience frameworks or models that HR professionals can sort of use as their playbook, right? When they go ahead and build their own.
Yeah, that's a very good question. So number one, my number one do will be is to look into it from a cultural intelligence lens. So this experience needs to be localized for a diverse group of people. And I will assume that there is no organization across the Middle East that's not diverse. It is natural here in the Middle East. My second do will be is to co-design it with the employees. Don't build the experience in isolation and then ask the employee to use it as it is. It's made for them, so it has to be made by them. So they need to be also part of co-creating this experience. The third part is to, or the third do, I will say, is to link it to the business outcomes. What do we need to do as an organization? A startup is different from a well-established organization with 10,000 employees. So we shouldn't be copying and pasting models of employee experience without taking into consideration our business context. What do we need to achieve as a business in terms of performance? What's our employer brand? What's reputation we want to create or to maintain in the market? What kind of experience do we have is definitely linked to what are the business outcomes that we want to achieve as a business. When it comes to the don't do's, that's a bit tricky. But my number one, and I will be very, very honest and open here, is just don't copy the Western models as it is without taking into consideration the local context. I do appreciate the science and things coming from the West, but it comes from a particular context and it has a lot of value only if we can apply it within our Middle Eastern context or within our local context. The second do not is do not rely blindly on data. And this might be shocking for some people, but I have seen this in my advisory roles. People will take the data coming out from systems, and now AI can analyze data much, much more faster as well. So you can get a lot of data analytics in a very short period of time, but add the human touch. Don't rely blindly on data. Add the human touch to it.
Yeah, I think that that's extremely important also because we're talking about employee experience, right? And experience is driven by this very personal presence, and you can't possibly use data to replace and make it work for people.
Yes.
The third don't that you want to share with everyone.
Well, that's a very important one, a very critical one. And I have seen this a lot, either in my career or in my advisory roles, that people treat the employee experience as an HR project, an HR task. It is not an HR task. It is the responsibility of each and every one of the leaders and of the employees. They need to be involved in creating, implementing, and ensuring this experience is the most. Employee experience is not an HR thing.
100% agree with you. And I kind of want to address that at the end of the conversation. But before we do that, Hisham, I think a lot of people get inspired when they see particular programs or initiatives working, right? And as you said, it's all contextual. So be sure to understand whether, a program or initiative or framework would be relevant to your workplace. But could you help us with some program specifics, models of employee experience that you've seen really work magic, for an organization and its culture?
Yeah, I have seen a lot actually. So I have seen a lot of emphasis. Now we are shifting from a knowledge economy where the manager is the one with the most knowledge in the room. This has been shifting a lot, especially with AI, because everyone can get the knowledge now instant on the spot. So it's not about having all the knowledge as a manager. It's more embedding into coaching. So manager as a coach, this one of the initiatives that I've been seeing a lot that people managers are being studying coaching and being on coaching so they can coach their employees. And the other shift I'm seeing also, and it's really a good initiative, is recognition is being transferred into an ecosystem. So it is not, again, top down. It is a 360 recognition, a peer-to-peer colleague to a manager to an employee. So recognition is more of a culture. It's in the DNAs of the organization rather than it's just coming from the top to down. And the third and last one is, I have seen, and it's really a good initiative as well, is replacing the old style town halls where the leadership talks to hundreds or thousands of employees into a kind of simulation labs where it is a two-way communication, feedback circles where everyone is talking, everyone is sharing. This is how organization can move forward, not only by the top down. There is the iceberg, very famous iceberg model, where you see like 75% of the problems are not known to leadership. It's known by the frontline employees. So they need to have a voice in such interactions. And this shapes their experience. This makes their experience a brilliant experience.
100% agree with you there. And like I just mentioned, the aspect of it not just being HR's job, right? I think
Yes.
that's where leaders come into play a lot of the time. And you are the perfect person to shine a light on this because of your extensive experience in leadership development. Not to mention that I think a lot of your work focuses on developing, emotionally intelligent, agile, and inclusive leaders, which is absolutely core to the employee experience priority, right? So, what role do leaders play in making positive employee experience a reality? I think it's important for us to understand the entire trickle-down effect. This isn't to say that all of the responsibility lies on leaders, but I think a big chunk of it does end up landing on their shoulders, like with everything else.
True, true. Actually, the leaders don't play a role in that. They are the experience. They are
Okay, yeah. So
the
basically those shoulders are very heavy.
Yes, absolutely. They are.
Yeah.
They are not part. They are. Yeah, they have a big chunk of it because they are the experience. And in most of the research, it says that the leaders are the number one reason for people leaving organizations. So they are the experience themselves. They need to be, as I said, coaches first. Not about how much knowledge do I have, but how can I get the best out of people? They need to be storytellers. People connect with the stories. They need to connect the personal values of their teams to the organizational values through storytelling. They need to be the architects designing the structure, designing the success. So they are more of maestros rather than having all the knowledge there. This was before the model where the manager was the one with the most technical experience or the most knowledge, where people will go and ask questions and get the answers. But this model is shifting. This model is shifting. They really need to be more coaches, storytellers, architects, system designers, rather than just having all the knowledge.
Yeah, I think it's all about right now, what other value do you add to the experience other than, the hard skills, right? And so much of it is about the soft-skilled nature of being a leader and being able to affect change in people and in organizations. Hisham, I think, a lot of very unique perspectives have come through in the conversation today. So for that, I thank you very, very much. We wouldn't have gotten there without you. I think the point that has really stuck with me at the end of this is that employee experience does not have a finish line, right? And you can continue to impact people long after they leave the physical confines of the workplace. And that's a responsibility that everyone should take pretty seriously, especially in today's day and age where we're dealing also with, retention issues and talent acquisition conflicts and things like that. So thank you so much for your insights on the show today. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you, Alia, for hosting me. And it was a pleasure as well. And I hope that people will get some useful takeaways in their day to day.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening in, everybody. And we'll be back with another conversation soon. Hope you've taken some copious notes and made, mental notes at least of what you can apply into your own HR journeys or your own employee experience journeys. See you soon. Until then, bye-bye.
This is Great FM, a podcast series by Great HR. Produced by Timber Media.